Support for Aspen Public Radio comes from Balcom & Green PC, a full-service law firm with offices in Glenwood Springs, Aspen, and Basalt, providing advice and solutions for their clients' legal needs throughout Western Colorado for more than 60 years. Learn more at balcomgreen.com.
Welcome to Valley Roundup. I'm Carolyn Zachariasen. The town of Silt has lost its police chief under suspicious circumstances, and officials are being less than cooperative in letting the public know what's going on.
Thank goodness for leakers.
The Roy and Fork School District is taking measures to let 32 people go, many of whom are teachers. They will be able to apply for their jobs again, but there's no guarantee they will get rehired. And in Aspen, the biggest development the ski resort has seen in decades is in front of city council. Some think it's the answer to revitalizing the west side of Aspen Mountain. Others think it's far too large for the neighborhood.
I would imagine that's all being figured in there. And, if you cut the size down, then you have to mitigate for fewer.
I've got to believe, without knowing for certain, that this group hasn't come this far because they're wondering where the financing is coming from.
We don't necessarily need to develop that to be vibrant there, because it's been vibrant there before without it.
But first, I speak via Skype with Randy Essex, editor and publisher of the Glenwood Post-Independent, about the lack of transparency in Silt's town government. You had a story about the police chief in Silt. He resigned or retired, but there's more to it than that. What did you report?
In January, we found out that Levy Burris, who is a veteran Garfield County law officer, he's been a Glenwood Springs cop, he's been a Garfield County undersheriff, and the Silt police chief for 10 years, had retired without any notice or any public announcement or any cake. As best we could tell. So we filed open records requests to try to get at what happened. And we still have some open records requests out there, but we got enough information that we felt like we should do the story. He was placed on leave, on paid leave, on September 7th, and an investigation of his conduct and of the police department in general, as best we can determine. The investigation itself is even a summary of it was not part of what we got back from the open records request. We did learn that the mayor, Rick Alois, Rick has been a long time, he used to be a town administrator, he's been on the council a couple of times, had filed a complaint actually a week before Burris was placed on leave, alleging harassment of his family and of Alois's family and his employees by the rifle police at Burris's direction. That is only a piece of the story, and there were other issues with the police department. We know that to be true, both from a couple of sources who aren't quoted in the story because I don't have a document to back up what they're saying.
Right.
And from Burris, who said, no, it wasn't because of Alois's complaint, it was other matters. Still, this is an interesting mix of small-town politics that I think really points to the disease of secrecy and a lack of transparency, because the people in Silt who are paying the police chief's salary, who now don't have a police chief, they're only now starting to advertise for that job, who elect the council members, really don't know what has gone on with their police department, and the town is rife with rumors. This is a great example, I think, of why transparency is a good thing, not only for the public that pays the freight for governments, but for the government organization itself. I think people have a right to know. We investigated our police department. We found X, Y, and Z.
Right.
It doesn't violate any personnel rules to tell a constituency what has been going on with a department. And
do you think that the city office, the mayor's office, failed at doing that?
I think that the city did its very best not to publicize this at all.
Right. So you're lying to the public in a certain way by saying, allowing that message of retirement to come out.
And you're letting rumors spread around the town, which is bad for the council. It's bad for Burris. It's bad for the next police chief. It's bad for all the officers.
And that's partly the role of the media to shine some light on this. And, you know, so Rifle Citizen Telegram covers SILT, right? But it doesn't, you know, a community doesn't have its own newspaper per se. So that kind of stuff, I'm sure, happens all the time. When organizations and entities are not scrutinized, then they feel like they have, you know, carte blanche to do whatever they want.
This is just almost a parable for what's going on in the federal government. I mean, if the people of SILT deserve to know what's happening with their police department, do Americans deserve to know the extent and nature of connections between the Trump campaign, Trump administration, and the Russian government? And there is a sentiment that we in the media are evil when we try to find this stuff out. Thank goodness for leakers, because I have been going around with a law firm that is representing SILT in this matter that is doing its very best to play semantics and disclose as little information as it possibly can. I don't even know. I'm still awaiting an inventory of the documents that have been denied because they're deemed criminal justice records, even though there's not a criminal charge here. I mean, I don't even know how to fight the rejections because I don't even know what's been turned down yet. Yeah. I will get that, and there'll be more stories on this.
More games. I mean, that's what they need to realize, is that they should just give up the information because it's only going to get worse for them. And then on another note, the Roaring Forest School District, they came out with a press release on Thursday, and they're being very open about some really bad news where 32 staff positions are going to be eliminated out of the district. And what is that, 24 teachers at least?
Yeah, it's still being sorted out. What has happened there is with the district building a new kindergarten through eighth grade school south of Glenwood Springs, enrollment by design is going to drop at Glenwood Springs Middle School and Sopris Elementary School on the south side of town, which is the closest in current enrollment district to where the new school is going to be. So the teachers who are needed for the K through 8 school, part of this, and we're still doing reporting on it, part of this has to do with the interest in having some dual language teachers at the school. And it's just not a one-for-one transfer, as the district news release said. You can't just take the teachers who we no longer need because of lower enrollment at Sopris Elementary and Glenwood Middle School and just give them jobs at the new school. Now, how this sorts out and whether there will be teachers who really lose jobs, you know, there's churn, natural churn every year in a school district. There are retirements, there are people who move away, and all of that is still settling down. It's also, and this isn't in the district news release, but new teachers are more or less at-will employees or probationary employees, so they're not guaranteed a job, and it is a way for the district to not keep people who may not be proving to be effective.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's always an issue with the public. It's with change there comes turmoil.
Sure.
I do applaud the district. I think under Rob Stein that RFSD, and I guess they were with Diana Serco, they've hired a part-time public information officer, which always helps. They're at the other end of the transparency scale with SILT.
They've been very forthcoming and very accessible when we ask questions. But it is sad to see, you know, that many teachers have to go. Particularly,
yeah, we'll find out what the final number is probably a little later in the school year.
Well, thank you for taking the time.
Absolutely, thank you.
This is Valley Roundup, an analysis and commentary of the week's news with writers and editors. That was Randy Essex, editor and publisher of the Glenwood Post-Independent. I'm Carolyn Zachariasen. I now turn to my guest in the studio to talk about a hotel proposal in Aspen. But before we begin this conversation,
I'd like to point out, in the Morning Edition segment of the show on Friday, inaccurate information was given when comparing the size of the proposed Gorsuch House Hotel and Walmart in Glenwood Springs. The big box store is over 100,000 square feet, not 45,000, as was suggested. We apologize for the error.
Thank you for coming in the studio. I've got Elizabeth Milia. She is the woman behind the Red Ant. It's an electronic newsletter that's on all things City of Aspen and political content with some commentary. Roger Merle, columnist for the Aspen Times and Sonoma Sun.
Thanks for having me.
Yep, and Madeline Osberger, contributing editor of the Aspen Daily News.
Great to be here.
So we're going to talk about one of the biggest stories in Aspen right now, which is, I believe, the final frontier of mountain-based development. And
truly.
Right? The west side of Aspen Mountain, there's been a few proposals for that to be redeveloped, and now the Gorsuch House is probably the closest thing that we're going to get to a development proposal that may get passed. And the Aspen City Council reviewed the development proposal on Monday night. It seemed like the council was fairly receptive to Jeff Gorsuch and Jim DeFrancia and Brian Peterson.
Yes.
Anything?
Yes, I do think so. Brian didn't speak. It was mainly Jeff was running the show, and then Jim DeFrancia and Richard Shaw as well.
Right. He's the land use planner.
It seemed like there was general agreement that a hotel for that space made sense.
Yes. Hotbeds.
Do you think that's going to get approved?
I don't know. I mean, there are three big issues that I see with it. Number one is what you talked about, it being a frontier. It's not a redevelopment of an old building and replacing it with a new building. There's never been a building there. It's been open space for as long as maybe forever.
Right.
So that's a big deal.
It's
been a public use piece of open space, even though it's private property. And, you know, I think it's huge for that reason. Another thing I think that people are starting to consider is that when the 1A area was vibrant, there was nothing on that space. So that space isn't necessarily, we don't necessarily need to develop that to be vibrant there, because it's been vibrant there before without it. And the third thing we have to consider too is that space really going to do what they're saying it's going to do? And are people going to congregate there at the beginning of the ski day and at the end of the ski day? And I'm not sure. If you have to take a shuttle from Ruby Park, you're already at Ruby Park and a block away from the gondola. So, I question all those things, and I think it's in doubt.
Yeah, isn't that the council's issue, is this rubber tire solution?
Certainly that came up that way.
Boy.
You know, Steve Scadron was really hell-bent against it. From the standpoint of looking at what the viable alternatives are, I mean, who among us goes anywhere in town and people know that we're tracking on this subject and they say, well, it would be great. We all want Gorsuch House, but we want to lift down to Dean Street. And that's why I wrote about it, because it's just not viable. When you know the facts on the ground and you know the ownership and the restrictions of the parcels beneath the existing 1A lift, you can see that the city gave those rights away in various encumbrances and decisions that they've made over recent years. And so that lift to Dean Street is not an option. So aside from walking, how would people purport to get to any version of a 1A, even the existing one, without a lift?
Well, and not to mention, too, that the Opry ski scene there, it is at the base of Shadow Mountain.
Right. Yeah. So it had to be inside.
Well, the sun goes down there a half hour before it does at Little Nell.
I'm going to disagree with that, because I've been known to have a cold pop over at the various iterations that now exist as Zeno's, or Shlomo's when it was Zeno's, and that patio. You know what? There's plenty of the year where it's perfectly warm. Yes, it's in the shade, but it's not a wasteland.
But it's also close to town. If you get cold, you can walk right to town. If you're, you know, now you throw a shuttle into that mix, and it's just not as appealing. Little Nell is the Opry ski place. Why is that going to change with a place that's more difficult to get to and doesn't have the sunshine? And
I don't see it being, you know, on par, like 50-50, like a split between the two, because you've got to figure we've got the Sky Hotel coming online in another year out as well, and that's going to be another vibrant Opry ski opportunity. But it's just one more place. I think it's an option. I look at the Gorsuch House piece of the puzzle as an option on that side of the mountain, something that we don't have.
It's an option. I just don't think people will exercise that option very often.
I personally, I just like the option, and it's like beachfront property. When it's gone, mm-hmm. it's gone.
Right.
And my biggest concern is, we all know something's going in there this time. And I'll be damned if it's going to be four single-family homes. That would just be a travesty. Remember the ski club land? I mean, Roger, for crying out loud, the
well,
ski club landed at South Mill Street. Now it's a cul-de-sac.
I don't understand the argument that it's a travesty if there are four homes there. Why?
Well, would SkiCo upgrade the lift then? If it's
well, that's a good question. I mean, do they have any incentive to put a new lift in there?
None.
Well, no.
And what if it starts? And Dave Corbin said he's one of the planners for SkiCo, and Mountain Ops, and he said that lift 1A is getting so old that it's hard to find parts.
Well, here's their incentive to replace mm-hmm. that lift. Just in the grand scheme of things, if that thing gets so rusty and old and it becomes an eyesore, it's a bad mark on their product. And people will talk about that in the ski industry. Mm-hmm. And tourists will say they've got that crappy old lift coming out of town. Why don't they replace it? They'll replace it when they need to.
Will they? We were just kicking this around earlier this morning. I just skied down there right before taping the show and stopped at the juncture right there at right Norway Island Summer mm-hmm. Road, and I thought, what if this lift went away? What points on the mountain access would go away with it? And it would be Norway, and it would be the ski return from Summer Road down to the 1A mm-hmm. terminus. And when you look at that in the big picture of things, I stood out here at the window right here in these offices, and you look and you say, huh, that's really not a very heavily traveled area of the mountain by any stretch. And I'm not certain that SkiCo isn't waiting to see what happens. You know, they've got this, they want an incentive to put the lift in. But why would they spend millions of dollars to put a new lift in for the 200 people?
For the same reason they developed Highland Bowl. Mm-hmm. You know, that probably doesn't pay for itself, but it's part of their branding. They can't afford to let that lift die.
Plus of racing.
And because of racing, because of all that. They can't let that part of the mountain die. It would just be an eyesore. Like I said, people would talk about it. Visitors would complain about it. It just diminishes their brand, which is everything.
Well, I think that is that's a critical question, because if SkiCo is going to go ahead at some juncture and replace the lift, well, then skiers such as yourself could say, well, we can wait it out. There's never been something there. We don't need something there. But that's an interesting hedge.
During the city council meeting, I heard when Dave Corbin was speaking about that, I've never heard them really admit that that lift is outdated. They've always said, you know, we've managed to put it together and it's fine and it does whatever. But when he said, I remember when that went down and it took them, 10 days to find a part for that?
Mm-hmm. He really implied that it's held together essentially with duct tape.
He did. And that's the first time I've heard them admit that.
It's the face of their mountain. It's the face of Aspen. They're going to replace
it. We'll see.
Yeah. There's no way they're not.
I think that there will be a development there. What the room size is and how many rooms there are, I guess, is what will be debated in the next month or two.
Well, what came out of the meeting was that compromise really is needed. And I think, I can't remember if it was Bert or Steve asked, would you be willing to forego the free market segment where there are six free market units, 1,500 square feet? That's sizable.
It is, but remember, Jeff chimed right in. He's like, I'm happy to get rid of the free market component, but you're going to get more hotel rooms because the hotel itself has to operate on a pro forma. You know, it is business, and these things have to make money. So to take away the free market units, they've got to make up for that revenue with additional hotel rooms, and that only increases density. So he flat out said, I can get rid of it. It's going to be a bigger hotel.
Doesn't it say something about our resort if you can't just run a hotel as a hotel?
Yes, absolutely.
That's bad.
Yeah. It's bad.
I mean, what does that say about our resort economy?
It says our dirt is really expensive.
Right.
But that's not unique to this ski town. There's a lot of, I remember when Bass Village was going through that development, and they were saying, no, a pure hotel cannot make it.
Right.
It's got to be, and the Viceroy is heavily subsidized, and that's probably why it might lose that flag at some point.
You are listening to Valley Roundup. That was Madeline Osberger, contributing editor of the Aspen Daily News. I'm Carolyn Zachariasen. We now continue our conversation about the Gorsuch House proposal with my other guests, political commentator Elizabeth Milius and local newspaper columnist Roger Morrell. Councilman Adam Frisch, brought up, is there any merit, can we get a lift down to Dean Street? In the Red Ant, you had showed that map of all the different ownership of those pieces of property up there. And Lift 1, which is owned by the Brown family and their investors, they block that. And plus, you'd have to have snowmaking and snow management down there.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know, did in this council meeting, they decided to do a third party analysis of whether this could happen or not.
It wasn't just the lift, it's the access. You know, maybe they have a little magic
Skittles?
Carpet going up. Right. No, I don't know if a Skittles would be, I don't
or
think there's a place to land it.
Some hypothetical thing. You know, I took a really hard look at that, and that was the crux of my most recent article. And it was basically the way that the Lift One Lodge approvals have gone and the distance between their two structures. As Corbin reiterated, we can have a lift up, but you can't have up and down at the same time. Right. You can have ski down or lift up, but not at the same time. Okay, that makes sense. You know, the rules with tramway are rules. Mm-hmm. But coming further down, you've got this beef with the Delincics, and maybe Roger can shed some light on that, because that's the million-dollar story.
Well, that's why they moved the lift 1A up to where it is
DRC
now.
Well, Brown, that and right? Howard Ory.
And it was just a feud, from what I understand. It was just bad blood.
Well, D.R.C. Brown said, I'm moving this lift up. Right? What
because
was
he didn't want to deal with them anymore, and they didn't want to deal with him. This is the way I understand it. It is purely a feud, and it was the biggest mistake. That is the reason that area died. I mean, when they moved the lift up, that's when 1A area continued to be non-vibrant.
Right.
So I don't know how you recreate that without building the lift down. That said, I understand that it seems impossible that lift will ever be down to Dean Street again. So are we just knocking our heads against the wall trying to make...
I think we are, too. I was astonished when Adam brought that up because I thought, first of all, planning and zoning got completely derailed on the Gorsuch House project on the initial chop at it, and they voted in opposition, not only because of the lift, they were dealing with mass and scale issues, but the lift was a big criteria, and they kept saying, I love the idea, but it's got to be a lift to Dean Street. And the fact is, sure, I don't think there's anyone in the community who, in a perfect world, wouldn't want to lift to Dean Street. But it's not on the parcel that SkiCo owns that they're potentially selling to Gorsuch House. So to link the two in terms of, you know, making a decision, you can't.
Well, other than if you can't bring the lift down, what's the point of trying to make that place vibrant? I don't think it'll work. It's too far. Yeah. It doesn't seem that far out of town, but it is.
It is.
It's up the hill.
I mean,
and
people won't even go from park at the parking garage and walk a half a block up Mill Street.
Yeah.
My thinking is if you can't walk to Lift 1A, you can't ski Aspen Mountain.
Well, I feel like, you know, that's true, Carolyn, but, you know, having been a parent of a ski racer for many years, the drop-off there when you have two pairs of skis and trying to do a turnaround and sliding off the...
It's a terrible street.
Well, it really is.
But they're going to make that harder.
It is.
And the 5% of the people who ski there now, you're going to lose some of them.
Well, I thought Eddie Rayner had a great letter to the editor recently, and he said, let's think about other solutions, like maybe open the Little Nell chair in the morning so people can ski over there. Because that chair is open, what, twice a year or something?
That's better than a shuttle.
That is better than a shuttle. The shuttle... not going to happen,
you know,
based upon the meeting the other day.
Am I the only one who wants another decent place to operate ski? Come on, you guys.
I'm with you, Elizabeth.
It's not
because,
high on my list.
Well, I think it's a great idea because in Europe you think of that. You know, I'll go back to Zermatt where you have little places along the hill. Three quarters of the way down the hill, there's a little place you can stop and have a beer and an outside, and then you ski down to another port. That's
exactly
what I think they are
We're
envisioning.
We're so sorely lacking that in this town. People like to have a little pop after skiing.
Yeah. You know, Jeff, they have been talking about the European spirit, but this is not European sized. So I don't, you know, that's another big bugaboo with this that the Planning Commission really hammered on. Maybe divide the buildings in half.
That just increased costs.
Well, it does increase costs, but, you know, that's not really our issue.
That isn't our issue. It's the issue is what makes the town better.
Yeah.
And if they can't afford to make the town better, well, let's not do it. But we haven't even talked about skiing on Norway either. I mean, is that a big issue for anybody?
Well, yeah, of course it is.
It's
for you,
a big issue for me. And that's just, it's one of the hallmark runs on Aspen Mountain. And I know a lot of people don't ski it, but it's a big deal to the people who do. So what are you going to give those people in exchange for them getting behind this hotel?
Skiers right. You can do it. They're going to glade that.
Glade Norway right. Island.
How about a lift in Pandora's?
That you're not even skiing the run then. They've got it so you can ski halfway down and then you skirt around the hotel, or you can ski it down to its
into a tunnel
natural finish, and then you have to take your skis off and walk around the hotel. But they should put a tunnel through there.
They're looking at it. Mm-hmm. I think they're looking at a bunch of different creative options.
They should do at least that. I mean, it's like you look at Texas Stadium in Dallas. When the Cowboys run onto the field, they run through a restaurant there, and that is cool.
Huh.
This hotel has to have something cool.
Well, that's why something
awesome.
Like that would be awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, they talk about it, but I haven't seen a drawing
well,
of that.
Well, I think the fact of the matter is these guys appear to me to be listening because they've done a pullback mm-hmm. on that west side, 20, 25 feet, so that the cutoff on Norway isn't what it was 6 months ago. It's still a cutoff.
It's a cutoff.
And
it's a
nobody's arguing that, but they're looking at different options. I just wonder, again, the trade-off. Everything's a trade-off in this whole thing. And I think you're right to ask for it. I think you're right to hold their feet to the fire to come up with some solution. But I think to kill something like that, and in my case, putting four private homes or a bunch of townhomes up there would just be absolutely criminal.
You know, we are a ski town after all. So when we start moving lifts up the mountain, when we start cutting off access to ski runs, really, what is the purpose of that? I mean, are we a ski town or
that
not?
Was a bad decision mm-hmm. in 1971,
well,
for sure.
This lift is moving yeah. up
well,
even more than it is now.
They're grading it. And then
they're grading it, but it still is further from Dean Street or Cooper Street. You've got to walk further away from town.
And
to
this
get to
is interesting
lift.
Because it coming back to the city and what they're holding the project's feet to the fire, it appears to me that this accessibility preventing the perception of privatization has them figuring out what this plaza looks like and what do they call it, the milling area where you put on your skis on the snow and all of that. And that is, in my mind, the most recent pictures I've seen mm-hmm. is behind the lift, meaning on the downhill north end of the lift, so that would, I don't know if it's, I guess it is 65 feet of difference, but that perception is that it's wider open and more, what do you mean to say, welcoming, the opposite of private. So that the trade-off that they're dealing with is the city planners and the people planning and zoning saying it needs to be more open and welcoming, therefore spacious and, you know, come one, come all.
Mm-hmm.
That's the balance counterbalance. If there were a lift right there, wasn't that strange when Steve Scadron was criticizing Gondola Plaza and the gondola terminus the other night?
Yeah, so and you can't see the mountain.
It blocks
true.
The mountain.
Yeah.
It is
true.
But that's, I think, why this chairlift is where it is, because it keeps that space open and, what do you call it, spacious, because they're getting beat up so badly on the concept of this being a private lift.
On Monday, what did the council say to the developers? What did they send them back with, Madeline? Was it, you know, you need to come back to the drawing board because of mass and scale?
Well, they're going to continue the conversation. They couldn't quite make any, but mass and scale was huge, as was the lift access, and the rubber tire solution just isn't going to happen, like
right.
I said. So that's a huge bugaboo there, how
right.
they're going to deal with that.
So
I think between those two things, and then the third one was the openness. I think council is going to have to look at the cumulative effect of that neighborhood. Like we were talking earlier, we have Lift One Lodge is about 70,000. You've got the one Aspen townhomes. That's another 70,000. And then this is 70. So
right. And just the basis on this for the listeners are 70,000 square feet.
Well, 70,000 square feet, but the gross area is 127,000 square feet.
And how many keys? How many rooms?
81.
Well, I think one of the questions that was posed to the Gorsuch House group the other night as well was, can you make it smaller? Can you make it, can you shrink this thing?
Yeah.
And the response to it was, which didn't bother you, Madeline, you said, was, but the room rates are going to be astronomical. And because we're not renting them, does that make it okay?
Right. It's all relative,
it's all
right?
Relative.
Well, something else, you know, if cost is a problem, they're going to have to mitigate the equivalent of 56 employees, one unit plan on site. But that's a lot, and that's a huge expense. So I would imagine that's all being figured in there.
Well,
but if you cut the size down, then you have to mitigate for fewer employees.
I've got to believe, without knowing for certain, but I've got to believe that this group hasn't come this far because they're wondering where the financing is coming from.
Well, with that, we will end it.
Mm-hmm.
So thanks for coming in.
Oh, always
great to be here.
That was blogger Elizabeth Milius, Madeline Osberger of the Aspen Daily News, and Aspen Times columnist Roger Merle. I'm Carolyn Sakariasen, and you've been listening to Valley Roundup. You can get a rundown of links and more information on the stories covered on this show on our website, aspenpublicradio.org. Valley Roundup is a production of Aspen Public Radio News.